My name is Bob Lagasse. I'm Executive Director of the Mulch and Soil Council. And this morning, we're going to talk about two very interesting topics and what the council's been doing for the industry and for the membership in two situations that are challenging for the industry. And one of them is weights and measures. We had an unusual situation this last year with particularly aggressive enforcement activity. There was an industry complaint to NIST that triggered action by the National Conference on Weights and Measures. Now, if you don't know the National Conference on Weights and Measures, it's a nonprofit organization comprised of all the state weights and measures officials. It's kind of like, if you're familiar with APCO, that is the fertilizer officials, NCWM is the state weights and measures officials, and they gather annually to discuss weights and measures issues, and they're also the arbiters of changes and keepers of the NIST Handbook 133, which is a procedure guideline. NCWM sent inquiries to their state's officials for an unofficial survey. Now, we had done a survey back in 96 that was an official survey, and multiple states did multiple testing programs in a specific time period and gathered data and provided us with the data. This was an unofficial process. They didn't collect the data. They didn't centralize it, so we did not have an opportunity to look at what the results were across the board. There was no compilation of the data. Samples of test results started filtering into the council office about May of this year. And we contacted NIST and NCWM to find out what was going on, because all of a sudden we just saw an unusual enforcement activity with no explanation. 14 states conducted testing over a three-month period. There were some additional states that did some activities that took 6 to 9 months. The frequency of the testing, however, showed us that when you all shared with us some of the test results, we started seeing data sheets that didn't look right. They looked rather odd. They were showing data that didn't compare with what should have been shown on NIST in, test procedures. So we contacted NIST regarding what we observed as different uses of container sizes. And they were using everything from 1 cubic foot to 2 cubic foot to 3 cubic foot to measure a foot and a half. 48 inches tall, which hasn't been an authorized container in a decade. There were product placement in the container. How they were putting the product in the container became an issue when some investigation entailed. And the measure increments were called into question, because we were getting decimal failures. You failed by 0.867. Well, any failure has to be divisible by 72 inches if they're following the guidelines that you round up to the nearest half inch. So it should be an even quantity divided by 72 inches. 0.8 something actually indicated that they were measuring the contents of the container to 1/8 inch. And that's not physically possible. And we've all agreed that that wasn't possible years ago. So the inspection sample test procedures were called into question, and that was, frankly, once we started getting the volume and could see this state was doing this and this state was doing that, and this report looked this way and that report looked that way, and said, these are not consistent. And the whole purpose of dealing with the National Institutes of Standards is that it's supposed to be uniform across state boundaries so you can promote interstate commerce. You guys can't live in an environment where you have 50 different test procedures. You have to be able to pass one test, one uniform test. This is the guideline checking the contents of packaged goods for Handbook 133, and we find out when we contacted NIST, we had been told for many years that 133 preempts state procedures. It is the federal guideline to promote interstate commerce and uniform across all states. it provides defensible guidelines for the states on why they did things, how they did things, etc. But this is a new twist here. Before, NIST always enforced, this is the way we train it, this is the way you do it. And if we had a problem, we would call NIST and say, they're not doing it that way. And they would call the state and say, you have to do it the way we trained you to do it. But there's a policy shift here that says states may deviate. And that the guideline actually no longer follows the peremptory policy that it used to. The net result is Handbook 133 has turned into a guideline, not a regulation. Some areas of testing methods are open to interpretation by states. And it's very difficult to write a regulation that is all-encompassing without it becoming a huge, massive book. But that means there's holes in the current procedures. There are areas of the test procedure that are subject to interpretation as far as methodology or result. If industry wants clarification of these guidelines, then we were advised that we have to go back and plug the holes with NIST and change Handbook 133, which means we have to go to the national conference and propose changes to the state weights and measures officials. They have to agree with the changes, they have to vote on the changes, and then the federal government will change Handbook 133. We looked at measuring containers. NIST specifies that the measure should approximate the package size. Some of the containers did not. Some states used 1 cubic foot boxes for 2 cubic foot measures, which typically you're supposed to use the measure that most closely approximates the size of the container. So some states used a 38 or 48 inch container to do 24 inch packages. So you've got an excessive drop of the product before it hits the measure. Other things had to do with various practices. So we tasked Bill Fontenot, our technical advisor, to go out and run a series of tests. And we put together a committee headed by John Waller with about eight other committee members from the council to look at the NIST handbook, look at where the gaps were and the procedures that they were following. What did we see in the field that shouldn't be occurring, in our opinion, and then run some tests to determine what was good and what was bad. And Bill ran a bunch of tests, and one of the things he did was he took a 2 cubic foot container and filled it 2 times, so we knew we had a stated volume. We knew the exact volume, and he loaded that into a bag, and this is fresh product every time. And he dropped it in a box, and he came up with a 38 inch box, and he came up with these measures, 23, 24 and a half, 24, 24 and a half, etc. Then he took this a different 2 cubic foot, this is fresh product, and each one of these is fresh product every time, so we're not dumping and redumping the same amount. It's a known quantity, fresh product every time. And he dumped it in a 26, and then we got 24, 24, 24, and the difference here, the mean average was for cedar chips was 0.4 inches. We did the same thing for bark nuggets and got a larger measure. Bark nuggets tend to be a slightly different measure. They came up with 1.3 in the 26 versus the 22. We did other containers where we dropped the product. We had a 2 cubic foot volume put into a 38 inch bag for hardwood mulch. Again, the comparisons we had to have. So basically, it's fairly consistent that we have about a half inch compression factor in the container. as long as we make one drop. If you make multiple drops, if they scoop part of it out and then another part, they don't do a continuous flow, you get a different measure. Here's a 1 cubic foot box that Bill constructed for this. There's an issue with the 1 cubic foot box because if you're looking at the top of it, when is it full? And if you look here, right here, it's over the measure amount. Well, if it's over the measure amount, any amount over, you round up to the next half inch. So this is really a 12 and a half inch box. It's what it should have been rated. So we came up with some recommendations on even using a 12 inch box, it should be a 12 by 12 by 14 so that you can measure the quantity over it, because it's very difficult to determine actually when it's full. And Bill's point of it was also very difficult when you're doing this on the floor and you have the parallax value looking at it from above, as opposed to putting it on the table and reading it level. You tend to read it differently. And that's in a lab, with lab people doing very precise testing. That's not in the field, at, you know, on the floor at Home Depot. So, again, the test procedures, a 38-inch drop versus 26-inch drop, there wasn't a significant difference. But in all cases, these are known 24s, and you're not getting 24 back. We also tested what was a compression factor. So we ran a test where Bill took a 1 cubic foot and he put it in a box and he put a divider in there and then he put another cubic foot in there. We measured where the first cubic foot was when we put it in there. We put a divider in the container. We added the second cubic foot. This measure, 11 and a half, went to 11 when the cubic foot on top, the weight, the pressure moved down, and the total value was 22.8, and we had a half inch compression factor. Second half was 22.5, we had a compression value of 3.7, so together we had in a 3 cubic foot height, from 3 1-cubic-foot boxes, we had 34 inches, 35 inches, 36 inches when you're putting them at one at a time. When you dump them all at once, you got 37, 37, 36 and a half, 36 and three quarters, showing that as the test describes in Handbook 133, doing a single dump, gathering the mouth of the bag, putting it up and discharging it into the container, you get a different distribution of the voids, and you get some friction factor, you get some air pushback, you get the same measure. It's the same thing you do essentially when you drop it from in the bagger from the hopper to the bag. It's the same procedure basically. So we also ran some additional tests on the partition compression on hardwood mulch. These were 2 cubic foot, but again, we consistently got half an inch in that area. So that's the compression factor that you get from the column height of putting the mulch in a vertical container. Just due to the combination of air spaces and the weight of the product. We then tested a procedure that we'd seen being used or heard being used and actually had seen it being used, which is state officials were trying to assist the process by decompressing product. Now, we all know that some bags can get compressed when they're in storage off a pallet, etc. They get compacted. The procedure is to roll them on the ground several times. We didn't specify how often, how vigorously, how much was too much. But the procedure is roll it on the ground to break up the compaction, then you open the bag and discharge into the container. The interpretive state procedure has been to open the bag, pour the contents through your hands into the container, and use your hands to decompress. But when you do that, the other procedure is either to pour it through your hands and decompress, or some states were actually using active filtering, and they would move their hands around. And what that does is stratify the product as it goes into the container. The difference here for shredded natural mulch, a straight dump on a bag was 24, 24, 24. Here we got 24.8, 24.5, 24, with just stationary hands and breaking it up. We lost on average a half an inch for shredded material on pine bark. We lost 1.6 inches, and for brown mulch, just a very fine mulch, we lost 0.2. The difference being the smaller the product, the smaller the pore space, the less the impact. But the bigger your pore space, finger sifting has an enormous effect. If you finger sift in an active motion over the container, you're losing 1.7, 2.7, 1 inch. That whole process artificially stratifies what the product is, and we can't replicate that in packaging consistently. There's no machine that's going to sit there and finger sift it. So, and the intent in the training for state officials is state officials should not directly touch the product, because this is what happens. You get an unusual short measure. The conclusions that we came to from the test data was that the height of the container is rather insignificant so long as the product is dumped in a single dump. If you do multiple dumps, as I said, then you have an impact, kind of a gravity effect, and inertia effect. Multiple 1 cubic foot measures reduce compaction, but they increase the opportunity for error, because now they've got to record. If you've got a 2 cubic foot measure, they've actually got to do that 3 times. They've got to count your overfill, so they've got to put it in, level it off, what's level, put it in again, level it off, and what's left has to go in a third time, so you get credit for your overfill. Well, if they just say, well, there's not enough in there, we'll just heap it on top, and they don't give you credit for that half inch, that could be your MAV. You could have a violation. So, although you have less compaction in a 1 cubic foot box, you have more opportunity for error. And finger sifting product, as it is poured into the container, is the most disadvantaged. They're not actually doing us a favor to decompact the product. They're actually stratifying the measure and making it more difficult to pass the test. With that in mind, the committee went through the handbook and started making some adjustments to fill the voids or fill the gaps of interpretation. And one of the things they decided is, hey, the black is what is in the NIST handbook. The red is the new. And the inclusion here that the measures must accommodate the entire contents of the package would eliminate using a 1 cubic foot box or a 2 cubic foot measure. Would also, for threes, they'd have to use a 3. They came up with the notes that are significant and most, these are the most interpretive. In the state officials. Other interior dimensions are acceptable if the test measure approximates the configure of the package under test and can accommodate the entire contents of the package at one time and does not exceed the base configuration. We also put in that rather specific that for a 2 cubic foot box, you shouldn't exceed 26 inches. That's 24 plus 2 inches. 1.5 to 2 cubic foot. Package for a 38 should for a 3 cubic foot shouldn't exceed 38. So basically, 2 inches above whatever the stated quantity of the measure is. And now we'll modify this after our discussion 2 days ago that a 12-inch box should be a 14-inch box, so that you get the proper measure each time, and they don't have to do an interpretation of what that is. We're also looking at the test procedure, making a note that product compaction, some types of mulch are susceptible to clumping and compacting. To ensure that the material is loose and free-flowing when placed in the test measure, gently roll the box on the ground at least 4 turns, but not more than 8 turns without lifting or dropping the package. We want to specify that they need to do enough to decompact it, and Bill probably does more testing of product through the certification program of bags than any state, because he does it on a regular basis and has done it for so many years. And this is what we do in our lab. And he says, by the time you're at 4, you've got pretty much the product is billowed out. But that's 4 complete turns of the package. And it's better if they do it on a table than if they do it on a floor, because it's actually physically more difficult to do on the floor. And we don't want them picking up and dropping it as they turn it, because that can damage the product, particularly if it's dry. So 4 turns, but no more than 8 turns without lifting and dropping the package. And then finally, NIST doesn't actually address the moisture issue with mulch. And from this point, the committee determined that we should add a procedural note in the handbook that says that deals with excessive moisture, that says basically that mulch products stored exposed to the elements may become saturated with moisture, and excessive moisture adds weight to mulch particles and distorts volume test results. Test samples with flowing or collected moisture in the package should be excluded from the test procedure. Now, we know that mulch is intended to absorb water and hold water, etc., and it's going to have a reasonably high moisture content, but we're talking about excessive, where it's been exposed to rain or some other element, and it's saturated. And when it's saturated like that, we're giving away a 1/2 inch when it's normal and relatively dry. When it's saturated, that extra weight will cost us more. We redefined the procedure specifically to open each package, gather the bag opening, place it into the top of the measure, and discharge. This is actually what is taught in the verbal training program that NIST does with us. And if you have used our videos, this is the procedure. But the procedure as taught was not in the handbook. And if it's not in the handbook, then it's subject to interpretation or modification. The contents of the discharge the contents of the package into the test measure in a continuous flow without touching the product directly. Do not rock, shake, drop, tamp the test at any time during the test. The addition of at any time is if you're using a very tall container and you got a very short inspector, it's hard to get it in there without banging the container around. And every time you touch the container, that vibration is going to change the measure. Exercise care to avoid compression in leveling the surface of the mulch and soil, and determine the volume reading up to the nearest 1/2 inch increment. That's actually an official procedure, but it's in a different book. And if they don't read the other book, they don't get the 1/2 inch notice. So the committee thought, why isn't that in the main test procedure? and we think it should be added to the main test procedure. Item four is just the, is in the existing book, package error equals package net volume minus label volume. There's no no objection to any of that. So those were the procedures that were described in the handbook and the committee recommendations for changes. Now, if you see some change that you think we should consider, we would be happy for any and every comment that you want to make on that topic. And we did get an editorial change, which we incorporated in this yesterday. Other weights and measures issue, some states failure to inform packers of the tests they passed. So all you get is notice of the test you failed. Well, you may have passed 75 and failed one. That's a state issue that we should work with the officials on. They have the capacity to inform you when you fail, which means they have the capacity to inform you when you pass. And that would be valuable information to industry. There is, when they do a test procedure, they're supposed to go in and follow a Category A test, which includes a random selection of packages across their inspection lot. Now, they can determine what their lot is, and generally that's a production lot if they're at the plant. But if they're at retail, where they have limited supplies, they can combine different lots into one if it's all the same product. So if you've got John Brown's Bark Nuggets, but it's four lots on the retail site, he can take all those four lots and call them one and inspect them. But he's supposed to, in accordance with their random selection procedures, there's a certain number of packages he has to take. If it's less than 250 packages on site, then he has to inspect 12. If it's 250 to 1300, he's got to inspect 24, and so on. Up to 48 for 3,000 or more packages in the inspection lot. And then he's got to select those randomly. You can agree, and often you do when they come to your site, to an alternative procedure, which would be, yes, just take two off the next six pallets, the top of the next six pallets. That's an called an alternative procedure that you as the person, as the packer, can agree to. Once you agree to, you can't change it. Once he starts doing that, if you don't like the results, say, no, I want a random test, too late. Okay, once you agree to an alternative procedure, he's supposed to follow a statistically random selection process at the retail, and we have noted that they're using alternative procedures. They're picking, well, in some cases, only two bags. Two bags is not an authorized inspection. It's not a legitimate inspection. It's not 12 bags. The only time they can do 12, less than 12 or fewer than 12 bags is if on site there are fewer than 12 bags. And then he has to do all the bags that are there. But the minimum official inspection is 12 bags. And if they're using an alternative procedure, they should ask the packer, not the retailer. We need to get this clarified on what's going on at the retail sites. Now, some retailers actually have the authorization because they own the label. That makes it confusing as to who gets to authorize an alternative procedure. And it's not that we wouldn't agree to it. In my experience, most of you would agree to an alternative procedure at retail because you don't want your retailer having his pallets strewn all over the place while they dig through them to get the nth bag. But it is a procedural question. Use of improper increments measure, again, as I mentioned before, we're getting decimal responses on these forms that are 1/8 of an inch, and quite simply, you can't literally view that rugged an edge across that long a surface to that accuracy. and failure to round up to the nearest half inch. Right now, we need to finalize the Handbook 133 edits in the MSC committee. And the committee met the other day, and they determined what we're going to do is we're going to post these edits online and ask for any comments. We'll give you a couple of weeks to please review it, download it, take a look at it. If you have any comments, please send them in to me at the MSC office, and we'll go through and review them. After that, we're going to request the National Conference of Weights and Measures to make a proper announcement to the states of our request for change to the handbook. Then we will have to go out and visit multiple regional meetings of the National Conference and get at least one region to sponsor the changes that we want to make so that it can go to the annual conference and be voted on. So we'll have to defend our changes at multiple levels, which means we have to get the Weights and Measures officials to agree and to support our request for these changes. We'll present arguments and data for changes at the mid-year meeting, hopefully, which comes up in February, and make the final presentation at the annual meeting, which is usually July. This may take 1 to 2 cycles before we can get everything we need in place. Any questions?
You mentioned about the moisture, excessive moisture. I thought the definition wasn't clear what that excessive means, and that might be a concern about discussion, the interpretation of that proposition of the moisture. Wasn't we need to try to compress and get some water out, or maybe some clear definition about the excessive moisture?
Good point. Good point. Yeah, if you can squeeze it out, it's too wet. Steve?
Any discussion in the committee about certification of the box by a third party?
You mean for state officials? But they would be the guys who would certify.
Not necessarily.
You mean certify the state boxes or certification of industry's boxes?
Both. I'm just asking, has that been part of the discussion?
No, not really. But we would recommend that you have one box of record that you do have the state certified, and they will do it. You just need to take it to them, and they will verify it. And then from that, you use that as the official test measure. That's not your production measure. You create another box and test it against that box as a reference. Because the other box gets beat up. And a lot of times when we find that we have a volume issue with a certified product, we'll go on site and we'll find that, I don't know, how often have you found bad boxes, Bill?
Well, about 75% of the time, the boxes are off. And sometimes they were fine when they were built. They squeeze in certain areas, they do something's come loose, and the box is no longer measuring what they thought they were measuring, they start with. So that was going to be my comment, was a lot of times the boxes, if there's an issue, it's one of the first things we check, and a lot of times they're just off. And sometimes it's half an inch, sometimes it could be, not in any one dimension, but when you add up, the volumes are can be significantly off. And test our box and their box, the difference is literally the difference in the dimensions.
Right. So, yeah, it's not uncommon to find that if you didn't build it out of marine plywood and it all of a sudden it swells up, it starts to delam inside, it's been banged around, it's out of square, they've kicked, these are not treated gently, which is why you need the reference box. To always check that box against the other one. One that you're not using, but you're absolutely sure it's right. And then when your production boxes get out of whack, throw it away and get another one, check it against the standard measure. Any state will go ahead and verify a box for you. You just have to take it to them they're not going to come to you. They might, but generally, they want to take it in their lab and do their test. And they use rapeseed or some known quantity to verify the actual volume of the container. Yeah?
Just another quick comment on the box. We tend to find more of the issues with aluminum boxes than with wooden boxes. Wooden boxes are heavier and a little sturdier. They go with the aluminum box, but it's going to work. But they, a lot of times when they set them down, they drop them, or they drop them on the side, so that the edges on the sides actually bend and move a little bit. So it, after a lot of testing, the boxes themselves, and they don't actually unbend very easily. So.
Okay, so boxes are an issue.
Yeah.
What's ahead for the future? You can expect this spring there will be another significant round of inspections. We recommend, as we have always recommended, that you should overfill to 5 to 8%. We know we're giving up 5% in the container itself. If you don't overfill to 5 to 8%, if you are packing a 2 cubic foot bags to a 24 inch measure, you may not incur an MAV, but it's highly unlikely that you would ever pass the average fill test. Because if you're starting with 24, we don't see that the product fluffs up enough. And every time you're, because of the airspace and the pore space in the product, every time you dump the same amount, you're going to get a different reading. And that different reading is going to be at least, what, half an inch? Fairly consistently. It's going to vary that much.
How did NIST accept the 3 cubic foot to 2.8 when you originally bought the new box tool? Was there any...
2.8?
You remember, you know, when growing media went from 3 cubic foot to 2.8 when the boxes were introduced, did NIST ever question that, or did they just let it go?
I don't understand the question, because I don't think we ever took 2.8.
Yeah. Well, your box design when you first went to NIST was, we all were 3 cubic foot. You remember that?
Uh-huh.
And then the cost of the new design of the box versus doing the 1 cubic foot, like you showed earlier, we all in growing media went to 2.8.
Right.
And there was no repercussion, is what you're saying.
No.
They didn't care.
Well, they just used the same box. And what we're seeing from Bill's test results is the height of the box is not a significant penalty. It's how you put it into the box that makes the difference. That the variation between boxes is not the issue. The variation of how they put it in the box is a significant issue. John?
As a practical matter, quite a few folks have retail yards. So they come wandering into our little retail, and what they're really after is buying under Kathy, but they take a bunch of bags apart. What happens to that material and bags and the clutter that they create?
They pick them back up.
Yeah, in most retail situations, like Depot or Lowe's, etc., they open them, they test them, they slit them, they staple them back up, they put a notice on them that it's an inspected and it may be shorter. Stated, and then they sell it. I've seen them at our place all the time.
Years ago, the last time I attended one of these, they talked about the standards of the box being 9x16x12 versus 12x12x12. For today, are you guys asking or suggesting that Capel measure a 12x12x12 box? Where years ago, I was under the impression it was 9x16x12.
You can use a 9x16 or a 12x12.
Is there any difference in the measure when you test them?
Bill, you don't see any difference in the measure, do you? Between a 9x16 and 12x12?
No, the only difference in the 12x12 is that you've got to push the bag and manipulate the product to get it into that 12x12 open.
And years ago, I was under the impression that 9x16 was more relevant to the bag, to the width of the bag.
It represents the bag.
Yeah.
We would like the stage to move to a 9x16. But then there's no agreement within the industry, because some companies prefer 12 by 12. But to get the dimensions of the bag into a 12 by 12, you have to manipulate the bag more.
And that's why the 9 by 16 by 12 at one time, I was under the impression it was a better tool for measuring.
It's easier to get the full dump and get the full advantage that that gives you, because you do have to manipulate a 12 by 12. Manipulate if you're using the 12 by 12, simply because the mouth of the bag is bigger than the mouth of the container. Yeah, we recommend and we use a 9 by 16. Bill?
No, I was just going to say that we prefer the 9 by 16. But I think NIST left the 12 by 12 in there for people who want to have them and they didn't want to change it. But I think the preference is always 9 by 16.
At one point, we actually provided containers to states for free so that they could transition to 9 by 16. Because their big excuse was, well, we don't have the money in our budget to do it, to build another box. So here's a box. Yes, sir.
What about putting stipulations has to be sold by such and such to meet that? If it sits on the shelf for 2 years, you're never going to come back up.
That's a tricky issue, because...
And we have that happening. You know, they don't rotate their stock, and then all of a sudden this guy comes in and says, well, I want all that pallet down. It's been sitting there for 2 years, but they're too lazy to take it out.
The bags usually deteriorate one day.
Yeah.
Black cap, it'll be fine.
The committee talked about that, but that means you're getting into date codes. And frankly, a lot of the inspectors that I talked to and following up what the states were doing in this spring, and we called states and we talked to the inspectors and asked them, and other than a few notable exceptions, none of them really said, well, we're not really finding anything more significant than usual. But I had at least three or four states said, you guys should be using lock codes. It would be in your best interest, and it would be best for the inspectors if you use lock codes. But that means you have to put a lock code on the package. It can't be on the pallet. All right, that's package by package, because once you separate the package from the pallet, if you're using pallet lock codes, you've lost it. So anything the retailer does, or if he collects the packages and takes them to a lab, to his lab to test, he loses that. So they would insist that it would be on package. And the technology is there to do it, but there's also a lot of record keeping that goes with it. And I would encourage everybody to do that, because that limits your loss. If he's inspecting one lot and one lot code, he can't put the whole production line and all other lots off sale. Because you can identify the specific lot involved.
That's only counting if that's on site at your manufacturing plant. If you just send it to retail, like they move them all together, it doesn't matter, correct?
Right, but they don't just go to retail.
Oh, I understand that, but, you know.
So, again, this is what the committee's been working on. We will take this forward to NIST and see if we can correct some of these interpretation mistakes, and we invite your comments on it. Our suggestion is be prepared for another round. There will be another aggressive round this coming spring through the summer, and it will probably spread to a few more states. There were 17 states ultimately involved. If you want a list of them, I've got a list of them. But they're all the significant states. Ralph?
What determines whether they can arbitrarily decide that all of your product is short in a state and just take it all off sale versus them being required to actually inspect a lot and take it off sale at a store location versus them just saying, okay, well, we're just going to take it all off sale in the whole state?
That has to do with the empowerment and authority that they have in the law. And you have to keep in mind that a weights and measures inspector has more power than a state trooper. He can come on your property without a warrant during regular business hours, as he wants. You can be arrested and removed. State trooper has to have a warrant. They have the significant amount of authority. These are not small issues, and they can put you off sale. And you have to understand, too, they have an internet system called WAMIS. They communicate with each other. And if they find that someone they believe is making a deliberate short pack, they can tell all the other states in minutes. And you can be on inspection in all the states in days. I mean, this can be a terrible event for you if you're not prepared for it, if you're inadvertently short packing. There's frankly no excuse. They don't care. Short is short. So you need to understand what you're doing. If you don't understand the variability in your product, pack a product, pack several pallets, and then take that pallet and break it down every package, one, and then chart it out. What's the variability between? If you don't know how to do it, give us a call. Happy to talk to you about it. Check the variability of your product and your packaging system. Do the maintenance on your equipment. Maintenance on equipment can cost you a significant amount of trouble when you're trying to maintain your pack. Head clutches on conveyors are a very common thing. That clutch slips and you're not getting your right measure. But you can't check the quantity on your stuff once every 4 hours. You need to be checking it once every 10 minutes. If that passes, then you can take a little longer between your next check, and if that passes, you can take a little longer between your next check, and if that fails, you've got to go back, reset, and monitor your equipment. So you should know what the variability of your pack is. If you haven't taken a pallet and broken it down package by package and say, this package was this, this package was this, this package was this, and you will get a highly variable chart and plot your average on that. If your average isn't above your stated quantity, you won't pass the average test. Any other questions? Okay, well, I thank you. And we're going to move on to another topic.
Yeah.